Tereo Ererangi o Te Mania. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora and hello, 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 my fabulous friends. Welcome to the all-new, totally exciting season of Chloe Dilly Seeking Talents. I am your host, Chloe Dilly, and I'm back older, wiser, and more thrilled than ever to showcase the most amazing talents and inspiring stories from all around. This season is going to be an absolute blast. We're talking epic talents, heartwarming journeys, and maybe a few surprises along the way. Whether you're here to be inspired, entertained, or just have some fun, you're in the right place. So, grab your headphones, turn up the volume, and get ready to smile, laugh, and maybe even dance a little. Because this is Chloe Dilly Seeking Talents. Let's make some magic together. Kia ora everyone, and welcome to an absolutely extraordinary episode of Chloe Dilly Seeking Talents. And I mean that. Today's episode is special because I'm connecting across the world via Zoom, all the way to New York, USA. Despite the massive time difference, I couldn't be more excited about this conversation because I genuinely believe I've discovered a diamond in the rough, someone whose art needs to reach every corner of the world. My guest today is Lance from Upstate, an adventurer, an investigative journalist, artist, influencer, army infantry combat veteran, detective, sergeant, police officer, and a retired instructor. But most importantly, he's a gifted musician, songwriter, and poet whose work is gaining incredible recognition on social media. Lance's poetry and music touches hearts, and his social media platforms are proving that his talent has no borders, from the USA to New Zealand, Australia, Europe, and everywhere else. He is also deeply passionate about history, ancestry, the old world, American Indian heritage, and sharing the survival skills and wisdom about rural nature. This is someone whose voice deserves to be heard globally, and I'm honoured to amplify it. Please welcome, all the way from New York, Lance from Upstate. Welcome, Lance.
Well, thank you for having me, Chloe. I appreciate you.
Lance, thank you so much for joining me across this huge time difference. You go by Lance from Upstate. Why do you want people to know you by that name specifically?
So geographically speaking, in the state of New York, you know, everybody considers New York, they think of New York City. But New York is a very large state, and upstate New York is very wild. It's very vast. Like the Adirondack Park is a gigantic park. It's the largest park in the entire country. So I wanted people to know that I was Lance from upstate New York and not from the city. Nothing against everybody in the city, but there's two different, you know, places in New York. You got the city and then you have upstate. So Lance from upstate, that's where that comes from.
Where does the nickname Lancelot come from? Is there a story there?
So people have been calling me Lancelot, Sir Lancelot, ever since I was little with my name. So that's really where that comes from. And of course, you know, I like to be chivalrous like a knight, so it kind of fits.
Tell us about growing up in the mountains of upstate New York. What was that like?
So I was born in Vermont in the Green Mountains. And where I'm from is right on the border, New York and Vermont. And so it's all mountains from around there. And the Green Mountain National Forest was really the place where I grew up, running around and fishing in the mountains and grew up hunting and spending time with my family outside. And honestly, I couldn't have asked for a better upbringing in that sense. I love being outside, and it's a beautiful, beautiful place. Again, most people think of New York and they think the entire state is a city, but the vast majority of New York State is very rural. And so where I grew up in Washington County, I mean, that county itself is like over 860 square miles. So all the people listening from the United States, they would know like the state of Rhode Island, you know, is a small state, but Washington County is about 2/3 the size of that state. And there's only maybe 60,000 people in the entire county. So it's very rural. And it was a great time. I love country living and the country lifestyle. That's for sure.
You are a military veteran. You joined the army as an infantryman when you were just 17. What made you enlist so young, and what exactly is this position?
I enlisted young because I wanted to get my life started. And my mother always said that she knew I'd be a soldier. You know, I used to talk about it all the time. But 9/11 happened when I was a little boy, and that really changed everything for my generation. So, you know, myself, much like a lot of other people, felt called to serve. And so I graduated high school early in order to ship out, and my mom had to sign a release form because I wasn't an adult yet in order to ship out. And I joined the infantry because I wanted to be a warrior. And I respect anybody that joins the military, but for me, I felt like if I was going to do it, I wanted to do the tough job and be a real warrior on the front line. So that's just kind of how I feel, and that's where my heart is I want to be out there in the front and protecting people.
At 22, you were deployed to Afghanistan. You said it felt like a big awakening after returning from the war zone. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I turned 22 in Afghanistan. I deployed when I was 21 there. And when I was over there, the people in Afghanistan are very beautiful people. And I realized when we were over there that we had really no business being over there. And so that kind of opened my eyes to a lot of things. And again, you know, I held on to, for lack of a better word, programming for a long time, because we're all taught to think and believe certain things. But that really opened my eyes to a lot of the not so truthful things that certain people in charge have been telling us, if you know what I mean.
After your military career, you worked as a LNA, a licensed nursing assistant, for the state of Vermont, taking care of veterans at the Vermont Veterans Home. What did that involve?
That was a very rewarding and humbling career. As a licensed nursing assistant there, what you do is you help people throughout their everyday course of living. And so people that are not necessarily able to take care of themselves, bathe themselves, feed themselves. So I did that and took care of them. And again, it was very humbling. It was very rewarding. It also could be very sad because you make relationships with these people and, you know, a lot of them are elderly and they end up falling, you know, passing away. But that was good. And it felt good to give back to them too, and that I could do it respectfully and take care of them when they needed to be taken care of. So being a war fighter, but also being gentle at the same time, you know what I mean? And I think it's good to give back and show respect to our elders.
After the military, you joined the police and became an investigative detective. That sounds quite like a serious job and requires dedication to the community. What drew you to that work?
I was a police officer for 11 years. And in that time, I was a detective and a sergeant. I worked on the tactical team and with a narcotics task force. And I also worked with child victims, stuff like that. I grew up in kind of a broken home, and I experienced some things that made me want to gravitate towards police work. So maybe I could take care of children and help people. And again, being a protector, always looking out for, you know, women that were victims of domestic violence and for children that were around substance abuse. Mental health is also something that I think is very important, and being able to talk to those people and help them out in that way. So it was very natural for me to step into that line of work and, again, to protect and to help people. And that's always what it's been about for me.
You were an instructor at the police academy. What was teaching other officers like?
It could be challenging at times. That is for sure. But it also gave me the opportunity to be able to, you know, nobody's way is 100% the right way, but I always felt like I could help teach people and get them in the right direction to the way they, you know, treat others with dignity and respect in the way it's supposed to be. So that was very rewarding. And, you know, I'm very blessed and thankful to have had the opportunity to have taught hundreds of students, both recruit officers and veteran officers, and teaching a plethora of different topics. But that was also very rewarding as well. And it gives a lot of experience, again, dealing with different kinds of people and different kinds of personalities and being able to communicate. Communication is incredibly important and something that I think that is lacking these days. So it's good to be able to communicate effectively.
You left the police in 2024. What have you been doing since then?
I have been going around all over the place, filming wild videos about architecture and hidden history. I've been obviously doing poetry and making music as well, but I've been doing a lot of content creation. And that really started from wanting to help get people healthy, wanting to help like show the truth and get people more involved in health and reconnecting back to nature. And so that's really what it's been. We've just been adventuring and having a great time. And I do a lot of live streaming. I was live streaming earlier today on TikTok. We had a couple thousand people watch and it was a great time. Lots of people interacting. And we talk about all sorts of cool stuff. So that's really what it's all about. Talking about interesting topics and uniting people.
You've been on a sobriety journey. How long have you been sober and what made you decide to share that publicly?
Yeah, sobriety. So because of my background and my upbringing and my careers, there's been a lot of trauma there. And some of us have a tendency to self-medicate with certain things like alcohol. And I had a problem with alcohol. Not that I was ever violent or anything, but I drank too much. And I've been sober for a little over 2 years now, and it was the single best decision I've probably ever made in my entire life. I lost a bunch of weight, and it helped clear my mind exponentially. But I shared that with everybody because I'm a real person, and I know that if I am feeling this way about a certain thing, then maybe some other people are feeling the same exact way. And if I can help them on their sobriety journey, then that's just as rewarding. So if me telling my story helps even one person, then that helps out a lot. And if anybody out there is listening and they're contemplating quitting alcohol, I'm telling you, you won't regret it. And you can come on over. You can join my family of people and my soul tribe here. And we talk about sobriety all the time. And we're all in this together. So sobriety to me is very important.
You were 11 years old on September 11th, 2001 in New York. You witnessed some significant events that day. Can you share what you remember?
Yeah, that was the first day of school in upstate New York. And those towers fell and that changed everything. And even as a little boy, I didn't realize the significance in its entirety. But like you said, you know, I was 11 years old when that happened. And then 11 years later, when I was 22, I was in Afghanistan fighting, you know, in the same conflict that was spurred by that event. And that has forever changed life in this country and all around the world. That was a very substantial incident. You know, and as a child, we're not supposed to see those kind of things. And it was quite scary for a lot of people. You know, there were some of the students had family members that were down in the city, and, you know, they had to be taken out of class and told what was going on. And it affected them even more so than myself. But that affected everything for a lot of people, and is still continuing to affect people now, you know, 24 years later.
Let's talk about your poetry, which is absolutely incredible. What style of poetry do you write?
Well, thank you very much for that. I appreciate that. So I'd say my style of poetry, like my signature style that I always go back to, is considered quote unquote slam poetry. It's like a lot of rhymes. I can sit down and write 5, 6, 7, 8 pages of rhymes, you know, all in a line. And it's something that's when you speak it, it's spoken with emotion and passion. And a lot of times it's up on stage almost. I don't want to say acted out because it's not acting. You know, I don't act. That's the biggest thing I always say. I'm not an actor. I'm me. I'm Lancelot. But slam poetry, it's a different kind of style. So it's not like a haiku. It's not like a short little poem. It's a long poem that encompasses a lot of different things.
Where does your passion for poetry come from, and what themes do you like to explore in your poems?
I've been writing for a long time, even when I was in grade school. And probably around your age, I used to write notebooks full. And that was one of the ways I was able to graduate from high school early, is I doubled up on all my classes my senior year in order to graduate because I wanted to ship out to basic training. I was ready to get going, you know. I was ready to be a big grown-up adult. And I would fill out notebooks of this poetry, and my English teacher took them for extra credit for me. And I could just sit and I could write and just make these rhymes over and over and over again. And it was all stuff from the heart. So what I speak about a lot now in my poetry is truth. And I talk about, you know, symbolism and hidden history and uniting the people. The same kind of stuff that we're talking about in this conversation, that's the same kind of stuff that I talk about in my poetry. Raising our vibrations, raising our collective consciousness together. We have to have positive thoughts, but empowering thoughts, and help each other out that way.
Who or what are your poems dedicated to?
Truth, love, uniting the people, protection. That's what it's all about, is uniting the people together. There should be no more divisiveness. And if we can all see through that and unite together, we are so incredibly strong. And so that's what I try to show, is that we are much more alike than we are different. And we can't let their programming dictate how we're going to feel. You know, we are very much alike. And so that's what the common theme always is. It's always about uniting people. I never want to be divisive. You know, I say peace, love, and plants. Stay wild, you know, live as we're supposed to be. And it's also very spiritual. You know, Christ is within all of us, and the Creator speaks through us in these ways. And that's very important as well.
Lance has graciously agreed to share some of his poetry with us today. Listen to Lance reading one of his pieces.
They say that every rose has its thorns, and walking through the garden, seeing all those beautiful flowers really has me torn. The soft petals feel smooth upon my touch, while the aroma fills the air with an electrifying rush. How much longer do I have to wait to pluck a beautiful flower that glows in the warm summer sun? Tiger lilies, magnolias, and forget-me-nots, lilacs, orchids, and bleeding hearts. Can you feel the beating of my heart as I walk through the garden, longing to find the perfect flower, a new beginning to a perfect start? The start of what's to become. My soul longs for that wild rose, my heart beating like a drum. Open for companionship on this winding road of love, like an Eve to my Adam, like the moon to my sun. The yin to my yang, the thought of penguin love, flying gracefully like a pair of turtle doves. Destined for that connection while longing for your touch, as I walk patiently through the garden, knowing how close I am to love. To cherish and to hold your hand, my queen sent from up above, walking barefoot in the garden as the songbirds sing and the honeybees buzz. They say every rose has its thorns, but my hand is meant to pluck the prettiest of flowers, trusting faithfully in luck. The fruit from a cherry blossom tree, I wait patiently and patiently. I know there's a flower that's meant for me. When you feel what I feel and you see what I see, you know that I am the Adam to your Eve in the Garden of Eden, meant for you and me. Love stronger than the angel oak in a Carolina dream. Your dream is my dream. Consciously waiting for you to join me as a team, I to you and you to me, flowing like spring water in the sweet summer rain. Dancing in the sunflowers, I can feel you call my name. As sure as these eyes are blue, you are the only one to tame my inner Tarzan looking for my Jane. In this notebook, these thoughts, they surely race, as I long for your touch, your lips surely I will taste. To have and to hold spirits bonded and embraced through. Every cowboy sings a sad, sad song. My inner child has a smiling face. My chivalry is strong and my princess has a name. Like Sir Lancelot, I draw my sword as you absorb my every word. My rose amongst the lilies, my rose amongst the thorns. Can you hear me yet? Have you heard? Can you hear me calling? Yet I say not a word. On a white horse I ride through the countryside as the eagles fly and the sunshine shines. My love, where art thou? You're in the garden and so am I. I have been waiting and it is time. Like a buck to a doe, like an old nursery rhyme. Beautifully communicated and connected in divine timing. Walking through the garden, my heart is no longer hardened. I can feel you, my love, and it's time we got it started. The feminine to my masculine co-creators, this is the beginning and not the end. Longing for that community in the garden as we move off grid. To the mountains, to the forest, to the garden as God intends. To live and to love with love it begins. Every rose may have its thorns, but love bloomed in the garden as new chapters begin. Every night has its dawn and every rose has its thorns, but God made these hands to love, to hold and adorn. Eternity lasts forever. I will not leave you wanting more. As sure as the waves crashing upon the shore, I love with all that I am, even if every rose has its thorns.
You're also a musician and songwriter. What kind of music do you create?
That's a great question, because I can't really necessarily be put in a box, but I play a lot of acoustic guitar, and I write stuff like country, kind of little reggae stuff, rock, I'd say Christian rock too, of a spiritual music, but I play all sorts of music, and music is very empowering and has a way of uniting people, and our words are incredibly powerful, you know, spoken into existence, and so it's great to sing empowering things. And that stuff that's depressing or sad, you know, we don't really like that kind of stuff. I don't personally, because we sing this stuff, we want it to feel empowering and unite us. But I like playing country music and, you know, some like Southern rock, as they say, but all sorts of different music.
What inspires your songwriting?
I guess that all depends on what I feel inspired by that day, you know, but just like my poetry, it's the same kind of thing, empowering everybody. And, it's about our way of life, connecting the people and, you know, getting us all united. That's the most important and powerful thing. And connecting through songs where people can sing and feel happy, you know, our happy vibrations are very powerful. And when we're singing about genuine things that people can relate to, then that makes it even better. You know what I mean?
Do you perform your music and poetry at the same events or separately?
It all depends on what the event is. I've done some places where they want me to read poetry and play music. And then I've gone to certain places where I just do poetry and other places I just do music. But I always have my notebook around with me. So I'm carrying around my notebook full of poems. I always carry a notebook with me. So I'm always ready to read a poem if somebody wants to read a poem.
Your social media is gaining fame very fast. Do you want to talk about how your social media is gaining fame incredibly fast?
Yeah, it seems to be doing pretty well. Facebook, we're approaching 40,000 followers in just a few short months. TikTok, this is my fourth account on TikTok in the past year. They've banned me several times for talking about truth. It's okay, TikTok, we still love you. But that's about 30,000 followers in that account. Instagram is approaching 30,000 followers. My YouTube, we're building that up right now. We have a few thousand followers on there. But if anybody wants to follow me, they can check me out on any of those platforms. If they look up Lance from Upstate, they'll find me. I also just launched a new website, lancefromupstate.com, where I'm going to be doing my blog. But if people go on there, they can check out the About Me section and some of my photographs. Like this photograph behind me, I took that in the state of Virginia the other day. It was a beautiful AM with a sunrise in the mountains. It was pretty cool. But I like to take photographs as well. So people can check out my website. And I also stream on TikTok, and I'm going to be multi-streaming here across multiple platforms, so people can stay tuned for that as well. But if they look up Lance from Upstate, they'll find me on whatever platform they're looking for.
How would you describe your social media content?
So I put poetry on there. And, you know, I post videos of me talking. I post videos of adventuring and being outside, you know, showing wildlife. And then a huge part of it is history, showing history everywhere, but especially the hidden history. You know, unfortunately, we've been lied to about a lot of things in history, and everybody's kind of waking up to that fact. So I like being out and showing everybody and letting people see for themselves and what they think. So like yesterday, I'm actually in Florida, the state of Florida right now. So I'm not in New York State. But yesterday I posted a video from the University of Tampa, which is this giant brick structure. And it's a quarter mile long. When it was completed, it had 511 rooms. It's 6 acres large, so it's gigantic. And it was built between 1888 and 1891. It's made of red brick, which red brick is piezoelectric, if people know anything about etheric energy and things of that nature. They can go check that out across platforms. That video is going viral now on Instagram and TikTok. But showing, like, architecture and like I said, hidden history, you know, there were giants that existed. People think that giants are a myth. Well, there were giant tribes all over the world, and it's been documented everywhere. And so that's something I talk about a lot, is giants and hidden history like that.
What type of commentary are you most passionate about sharing online?
That's a difficult question. Well, definitely the poetry is very powerful. And the stuff that we're talking about, even with giants, I talk about giants in my poetry. You know, I talk about stuff from the Bible. I talk about history. And so I'd say that's probably my most favorite, most important commentary, I think, is poetry. And being able to get on stage and speak that, I really enjoy doing that.
You're fascinated by the Roman history and ancient civilizations, old world, castles, ancient history, and how it intertwines with our lives today. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes. So just like I was talking about before, we kind of been lied to about our history, and it's been written and overwritten. And there have been multiple advanced civilizations that have existed before us, and there's evidence of that everywhere. Just like people talk about the mud flood. There's evidence of the mud flood. Every culture talks about, you know, giant flood events that have happened. And a lot of this stuff is also oral tradition. So just meaning stories. People told stories before we had a written language, just like they spoke in symbols. And the mainstream science wants to negate all of that, but there's been a lot of cover-ups about that. And people can do research about, especially the giant stuff. The Smithsonian has covered up a lot of that. There have been thousands and thousands of giant skeletons, and they've all been discovered throughout the Americas and throughout the world. And it's very intriguing. A lot of the different Native American tribes, they all speak of the giants, and they were everywhere. Down where I am right now in Florida, giants were actually, they were buried in mounds. And Abe Lincoln actually spoke about the mound builders of Ohio. Presidents have talked about these things. But down here, they had shell mounds in Florida. And they would bury giants under huge giant communal burial mounds. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty fascinating. But a lot of these old structures that we have here are much older than what they want us to believe. And the narrative and the timelines don't make any sense. And that's the kind of stuff that we like to explore. And we have fun doing it, you know?
Let's talk about the legend of Lancelot, the knight from the Arthurian legend. How does that story connect to you?
King Arthur. Well, Lancelot, that's kind of, you know, Sir Lancelot, that's where the name comes from. There's some sort of connection there, that's for sure. And but either way, I believe in honor and being chivalrous and being very respectful. And as a, you know, people of being a knight, I think that resonates very deeply.
You have original photographs on vintage paper from certified collections, photos from 1900s, conversations, and fairs showing incredible architecture. Tell us about these.
I know, and that magazine I spoke to your mother about, that's from the Chicago World's Fair, the Columbian Exposition. And one of the ways that they covered up a lot of these civilizations that existed is they had these World's Fair events. And the one specifically you're referencing is the Chicago World's Fair. And I have a booklet, a magazine from the late 19th century that has the original photographs in that before they destroyed all these huge, beautiful buildings that they said were built temporary just for the World's Fair. Well, there's plenty of us that have researched this and investigated a lot of these stories, and that's not the case whatsoever. So people can look up the World's Fair. There's been World's Fairs all over the world, but some of the ones that are pretty impressive are the Chicago World's Fair, the St. Louis World's Fair. Then there was the Pan American Exposition in Buffalo, New York. But there were all these different World's Fairs where they had all this giant, beautiful architecture, which they said they made temporarily out of papier-mâché, essentially, just to destroy. But none of that makes sense whatsoever. And I wish I had the magazine to show you, and I could show you some of the photographs from that originally, and you could see for yourself. But that's one of the best ways, I think, that we can compare some of this research, is that we look at some of these older articles and these older photographs, and they help to show the real history.
What baffles you most about the architectural achievements in those photos that even scientists can't fully explain today?
Is how they did it, logistically speaking. So a lot of the places that these giant structures were built, they didn't have any people living there to build them. And then the infrastructure that they had in place, you know, a lot of them had horse and buggy. So you see these giant megalithics of giant stone structures, multiple stones. And then some of these photographs have a little tiny horse and buggy right next to it. You know, giant structures. Well, how are they transporting all those stones back then? And when you have these giant structures popping up all over the country when there was no population anywhere to build these structures, it doesn't make any sense. And that doesn't make any sense. And then there's plenty of photographs where it looks like people are digging these structures out from mud floods. That's what we talk about, the mud flood, like a flood event. Like there was some sort of a flood event that happened, and they came and they just dug these structures out and then reused them or repurposed them for something else. But that's what doesn't make any sense, is that they have these structures that were built in cities and towns that didn't have enough people to build them, nor did they have the resources to do it. And if they tried to build them with modern machinery, then it would take them three times as long to build as opposed to what they're saying it took them back in the day. So a lot of these structures you see, the history on them, it says that it took 1, 2 years, 3 years to build them. Where today in modern times, it would take 5, 6, 7 years with modern equipment, modern machinery, and unlimited resources. So it doesn't really make any sense.
So you're passionate about American Indian heritage and your tribal background. Tell us about your ancestry.
So on both sides of my family, my mother's and my father's side, there's a lot of different tribes, but Iroquois, Abenaki, Wallanak, some Mohegan. So my ancestral roots go very, very deep. And people need to get a misconception out of their head. You know, they think because of people's skin color that they don't have ancestry. And our melanin is literally like one of the least important things in this whole thing. And so just because somebody's skin is a different color doesn't mean that they don't have ancestry. But there's a lot of roots on both sides of my family. And a lot of us have a lot of mixed roots. And it's something that we should all, you know, look into and kind of understand a little bit more, because it helps us connect back to the earth. I really do think so.
You talk about the colonization of America and teepee structures. How does that history influence today's world?
So the teepee structures. So obviously there are a lot of tribes that were very nomadic, you know, but a lot of the propaganda that they show is, you know, Native Americans in teepees. And, you know, a lot of that comes from their forced resettlement from their ancestral lands to, you know, different parts of the country. And so that's just a lot of the programming. You know, they had a lot of the tribes had, you know, large civilizations, large cities, large communities. And we aren't really taught the real history that we should be taught about these things and about how people were uprooted from their ancestral lands. And I think that impacts everybody because it's the programming. It's the whole thing. And you know, they use movies to program people, cowboys and Indians kind of stuff. And that's not necessarily how it always was. And it's not how the truth is in real life, but that's how they want it to be portrayed. And it's all subconscious and conscious programming. if that makes sense.
America today is beautifully mixed. All races, nationalities, beliefs, influenced by Europe and other continents. How do you see that diversity?
Well, it's everywhere. There's all sorts of beautiful people. And that's why I say we're all different. There's no such things as colors. We're all just different shades of wheat, you know, especially in God's eyes. And that's the whole thing. If we can focus more on the similarities as opposed to the differences, you know, everybody wants to come together. We all want the same things. We want to raise our families in peace, and nobody wants conflict. They really don't. And I think that all people are inherently good. They just are forced to make bad decisions because of situations that they're put in. And so that's why it's so important for me to unite people in truth. But we also have to address the root issues of a lot of problems, you know, problems that could be fixed that certain powers that be don't want to fix because, you know, they make money off of the chaos. But there's a lot of diverse people around here and diverse cultures. And I love all people, and I have a lot of amazing and beautiful interactions with everybody. But I also feel like if you're putting out good energy into the universe, then you get good energy back. You know, if you walk around and you're nice to people all the time, then people are going to want to be nice back to you. You know what I mean?
You're fascinated by real historical cowboys, not the Hollywood versions. What's the difference?
Oh, the difference is the truth, the story, you know. I'm fascinated by all sorts of history that's been, you know, erased and changed and showing the real stories of people. And I think that's what everybody wants. They just want the real stories, the real history. They don't want the lies. So it's not just cowboys, you know, and it's not just quote unquote Indians. It's all people. It's all, we all want to know the truth of our heritage and the real stories and why things are the way that they are, you know, because we can't move forward without the real truth. And then when they tell lies, they cover up more and more lies, and it's just like telling lies. But the truth always stands, and everybody just wants to know the truth about things. You know what I mean?
You have interesting views on mud floods and lost history. Can you explain that theory?
So like I was saying before, you know, so many cultures, and they talk about a great flood incident that's happened. And there's many pictures of people digging out a lot of these huge structures that appear to be covered with mud, hence the reason they say it was a mud flood. But there have been several, quote unquote, what they call resets, and where there's been some sort of event that has affected and changed the landscape, changed the earth, you know, changed this realm. And again, when they cover up the real history and they have a certain narrative about things, it's hard for us to get the truth. But with that, there's a lot of, we just have to talk to people. And a lot of people, you know, in different communities, like people down in Florida know things about certain areas that we can research. When we get down here and we talk to people, and they have real life stories from their family members that are passed down. And we have to just communicate and talk about these things. And we can't shut out other opinions and viewpoints just because they differ from what public school has taught us, which they only want to teach us one thing to keep us kind of locked into a certain way of thinking. You know, they don't want us to think outside the box. That's why they treat us all the same way and they teach us all the same things. That's not necessarily how we were supposed to be. We were supposed to be kind of wild and free and doing our thing. We're not all supposed to be in a box. And there's lots of hidden history. And this all, if people haven't looked this up, they talk about the, and again, it's another term I don't necessarily use, but Tartaria. But there are multiple advanced civilizations that existed here. Atlantis was real. Lumeria was real. And there were many different civilizations that were here. They lied to us about the Native Americans talk a lot about the giants and the giant tribes. And actually, now this is an excellent book right here. Okay. It's a thick book. And this is called The Encyclopedia of Ancient Giants in North America, okay, by Fritz Zimmerman. And what's cool about this is that it literally has all these texts, all these photographs, all these depictions. These are thousands and thousands of stories and archaeological discoveries all across North America talking about the giants and their mounds and how they're discovered and Native American stories. And now there's numerous books like this, okay? And this is a great book. I love this book. And he's a great guy. I can follow him on social media. But there's so many stories about blonde and red-haired giants, believe it or not. And some have six fingers and six toes on each hand. And some actually have double rows of teeth and were cannibals. I know it sounds wild, but if you go back to the Bible, they talk about the Nephilim, all right? So Goliath was 6 cubits tall. Now, a cubit is different measurements, but I know that we use inches as opposed to the metric system, but like a cubit would be like anywhere from 17 and a half to like 19 inches, somewhere in there, right? And there's like mixed depictions of that, but he had been 6 cubits tall, so that's like 9 feet tall, okay? And that was Goliath. And so they talk about the Nephilim, and there were giants in the Bible, all depictions, just like they talk about with the flood and everything. But there were all these giant tribes all across North America, and they're all over the world, and there's plenty of documentation about that. And so, and they were part of all these civilizations.
What is your opinion on time travel? Do you think it's possible?
Yes. Yes, time travel, I think, is possible. So it's very, I guess it's kind of complicated too. So we live in a 3D state of reality. So there's different dimensions within the dimension that we live in, I think. And I think it's very possible. Tesla, you know, he worked on a lot of this kind of stuff. Same thing with energy, etheric energy. And we were talking about that earlier. But yeah, I think that stuff is possible. I think that's possible.
You collaborated with Thomas Farrell. What was that experience like, and what unites you both?
Big T, make it make sense. Yeah, I did a podcast with him. I actually went into Brooklyn, New York, which is in New York City. And him and I were supposed to film together one day. And all the cell phones went down. And so I got into New York City, drove my truck into there, and all the cell phones went down. So we never got to hang out with each other. But we're going to be linking up, I think, actually here in Florida, possibly. But either way, we talk a bit. And I was on his podcast. You can check that out on his YouTube channel, Make It Make Sense. But, you know, none of this stuff makes sense to him either. And so I think that's how we kind of connected with this. How this, you know, works in social media is like, say, you know, he's got quite a substantial following. Well, people see my videos and they'll tag his name on it, and vice versa. People will tag my name on his videos. And that's really how a lot of us content creators get united. It's not from us necessarily seeking each other out. It's from a lot of our followers cross-posting to each other saying, hey, check this out, check this out. And that's how it works. But yeah, go check out that interview. It's on his YouTube channel. It should be. I was the second guest on his podcast. So Make It Make Sense.
What are you working on right now that you're excited about?
Well, my poetry. I've been going around and performing more, doing my poetry, playing guitar. Before I came to Florida, I performed in 3 different states in a week. So that was pretty exciting, you know, doing that. Like I said, I just launched the website and I'm working on getting my poetry recorded, and that's going to be going to Spotify. So I'm really excited for that, and I'm looking forward to that.
You want to have a farm. Tell us about that dream and what the farm will be called.
All right. So yeah, so that was, like I said, the biggest reason why I even started social media was sobriety and health, and I want to heal veterans. And so I have a dream, and I know it's happening, and it's called Guts and Glory Ranch, and I want it to be an organic farm where I have some tiny houses, and I can do almost like a veterans fellowship where I can bring guys in, guys and gals, and help heal warriors by getting them reconnected to the earth through holistic practices, prayer and fasting, you know, just like they talk about in the book of Matthew. But having a place also where people can grow food, where we can have a sense of community, and where we can go back to rewilding and living as, you know, the creator intended. But, you know, having clean food and clean water and a safe place to raise our children are incredibly important. And if we can help heal all the veterans and the warriors, you know, from all the trauma that they've had to endure. And anybody, for that sense, you know, and the trauma that they've had to endure, you know, that's a big sense of empowerment for all of us. And we're going to make it happen. So Guts and Glory Ranch, no guts, no glory. And, you know, I think it's divinely guided. That's for sure.
You have amazing survival skills and knowledge about rural nature. How did you learn all of that?
That's funny. I was talking to my mother earlier, and we were talking about, you know, wild edibles and different things that we grew up, you know, eating that most people don't even know exist. You know, you go into the woods and you pick something. It's just like growing up and being a fisherman and fishing all the time and catching fish and eating your own fish, you know. And I was a hunter and a bow hunter, and I harvested a lot of deer, and eating that way is very spiritual. But that's really where that all comes from, is that a lot of these ways were taught by my grandparents, were taught by my family. And on both sides of my family, they've been living off the land. The people in the Northeast of America, they have to be tough because it gets really, really cold and it's very mountainous and it can be quite expensive to survive. And so you got to be tough and living off the land and having some sort of subsistence lifestyle, having a garden and being able to forage wild edibles and being able to catch your own protein, you know, whether it be fish or small game or deer. It's very important. It's just a normal way of life around here. And so that's where a lot of that comes from. And those mountain skills, those wood skills are very invaluable.
How would you comment on the saying, no guts, no glory?
Well, that's it right there. No guts, no glory. You got to take that leap of faith and just have no fear. You know, I'm talking about the Bible a lot, but how many times in the Bible does it say have no fear? So no guts and no glory. And going back to the ranch, you know, Guts and Glory Ranch, that's what it really goes back to. And taking care of the warriors, the brave people that stand up and want to protect, you know, blessed be the peacemakers.
You have some interesting tattoos. Tell us about them and what they mean.
I definitely have some interesting tattoos. There's a lot of stuff. You know, I have fish and deer, lots of military tattoos. Stuff about my heritage, a dream catcher over here, and crossed rifles. But all my tattoos are kind of bookmarks in my life. And, you know, a lot of different cultures, they have tattoos, and that's something that I've always gravitated towards as well. And, you know, I haven't really gotten tattooed in a while, but tattoos tell a story, and all my tattoos tell different stories. But a lot of it's about my heritage, my family, and different things I've experienced in life.
What is your perspective on the global situation, politically, economically, inflation, prices affecting everyone?
Well, that's a tricky conversation because I think a lot of it is fabricated for control. And they, just like they pin us against each other, you know, they pin races against each other, black versus white, Republican versus Democrat, or left versus right, Christian versus Muslim. It's all for their divide. And again, we have much more in common than we do difference. And we have to focus more on what we have in common as opposed to our minute differences. With that being said, a lot of this stuff is unwarranted and the people don't want it anymore. Nobody wants any wars anymore. Nobody wants to deal with any of this nonsense anymore. But this is why communication is so very important. You know, along with our faith and uniting that way. But I think a lot of it is made up by these people just to keep us in control, or keep themselves in control. And they want to keep our vibes down. They want to keep our vibrations down. This is all very spiritual, and it's a conscious fight. But I don't know. It gets very, very deep with that. And I don't know how deep we want to go with your audience. But I will say that a lot of things, I think, are fabricated. And they're made this way to, they want to create a sense of lack. And they want to keep people fighting each other. And so they create these issues in order to keep that going. Because if we all unite together, then we're incredibly powerful. you know, and so that's what we have to work towards.
All right, Lancelot, time for our signature fun questions. What is the closest thing to magic?
What is the closest thing to magic? Well, magic is real, but the closest thing to is our words. Our words are powerful, and we can speak things into existence. So this is why it's so incredibly important. Like, if you want to change the way you feel about yourself, don't put yourself down. The little voice in your head, if you're thinking negatively, change it. Change it. Get that thought right out of your head and turn it into a positive thought. But that's magic. Our words are powerful, and we speak things into existence. So that's why it's important to talk about good things and changing our way of thinking like that. But that's the closest thing to magic that anybody can control, for sure.
What is the grossest thing that you can think of?
I've experienced many gross things, Chloe. But honestly, the grossest thing I can think of is purposefully lying and deceiving others. That, to me, is the most repulsive thing. If we could not lie about things and we could just be honest with each other and operate in good intent, that's the way that things are supposed to be. So to me, one of the grossest things is people lying and deceiving others. There's no need for that.
SpongeBob or The Simpsons?
So I'll be honest with you. I don't really like either one of them. But The Simpsons, they talk about showing truth in The Simpsons, and they show truth in SpongeBob as well. And so I think for entertainment factor, we'll go with SpongeBob.
What do you want to wish to our listeners and followers around the world?
I want to wish them nothing but love. That's what I want them to feel and to see and to speak. Love and speaking from our heart, being genuine to yourself, is the most powerful thing that you can be. So be true to yourself, speak your truth, and stand on that truth. So it's all about love and uniting people. And that's what I want your listeners to gravitate towards, is that a lot of the stuff that we get hemmed up about in our own minds, we are our own worst enemy with that. And stuff that you put yourself down for because you think somebody else is going to judge you for it, they've already forgotten about it. So don't even worry about it. Just be you, be happy, and love yourself. And it all starts within. And that goes back to what we were talking about with magic. You have to train the way you think. And so you speak that positivity and your reality into existence.
If you could go back in time and talk to your 10-year-old self, what would you say to him?
Have no fear and be you. Don't worry about what other people think. Just be you. Operate being genuine. And like I said, just be a good person. Put out good energy and you'll receive that good energy back. I fully believe that.
Finally, what's your message to humanity?
Love one another. Love one another. I keep saying it over and over and over again, but we all have so much more in common than we do differences. And if we can see past the programming and the lies that they told us, then we can unite together. And that's powerful. That's incredibly powerful. And we're going to do that. We're changing the world, and I know we are. And I appreciate you, Chloe, for giving me the mic and the opportunity to speak. I really do.
Lance, this conversation has been absolutely incredible. From military career to care for veterans to detective and instructor to the artist you are today, your journey is remarkable. But what strikes me most is how you transformed every experience, the good and the difficult, into art that connects with people globally. Your poetry speaks truth, your music touches hearts, and your social media presence is proving that authentic voices can reach across oceans. You are the diamond in the rough, and I'm confident the world is going to see you polished and shining on stages everywhere, from the USA to New Zealand, Australia, Europe, and beyond. Your passion for history, your respect for ancestry, your survival wisdom, and your sobriety journey, and most of all, your willingness to share your authentic self, that's what makes you special. Thank you for staying up late to connect with us across time zones. To all our listeners,
Follow Lance from Upstate on his social media platforms. His content will make you think, feel, and see the world differently. Share his poetry, share his music, and share his message. This is what Chloe Dilly Seeking Talents is about. Finding those voices that deserve global platforms and helping them reach you, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining us on this international episode. Until next time, keep seeking truth, keep honouring history, and keep supporting artists who dare to be real. Ka kite anō from all of us in New Zealand. Thank you, Lance from Upstate.
Thank you very much. I love and appreciate you all so very much. Thank you, New Zealand. I love you. Come check me out. Lance from Upstate. Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube. And we'll see you all soon. Much love. Thank you.
That's the show, everybody. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this show and want to hear more, head over to plains.org.nz for past episodes. You can also subscribe on Spotify and Apple Podcasts to get the new episodes delivered right to you. Do you have a talent you'd like to share? I'd love to talk to you. Just email info@plains.org.nz to get in touch. Keep working on your talents. You are amazing. Until next time, bye!